strength. The resistance will continue as it continued for 75 years. What part of this sentence do the Israelis not understand? It's because they have a criminal mind, and a criminal mind is incapable of thinking otherwise.
Zionist social media reacted strongly to this issue, and here are some sarcastic comments about the absolute victory that Netanyahu spoke of.
Agam, we lost. They returned to these shores. Brothers were killed there. Here, 600 soldiers were killed and their families do not sleep at night. Tal, 133 abducted are suffocating, suffering in the tunnels, and the residents of Gaza celebrate on the beach. There are no words to describe this. Shahaf, I have a lot of shame from this war. How humiliating and unpatriotic. Nicole, the war is over. We lost. Anne, a complete victory, but it's not ours.
Doctor, very briefly, what are the implications of acknowledging that Hamas, even after more than half a year of aggression, still governs Gaza and has not undermined its authority?
Well, they're saying that Hamas controls Gaza. No, it's not true. The Palestinian people control Gaza and the Palestinian people support Hamas. That is the right way to say it. It is not that Hamas is actually doing like a despotic regime in Gaza. These people and the people of Gaza had ample all the opportunity to break away from Hamas. They hold on to the resistance and they hold on to the leadership. And Yahya Sinwar is and Abu Khalid Daif are the ones to make a huge breakthrough. And every Israeli will remember these two names.
Definitely. A great way to end off today. I'd like to go ahead and thank Dr. Aman Ashabi, political analyst, for joining us today. It was my pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Till next time, salam.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The United States' veto of a draft resolution recommending that Palestine be granted full membership at the United Nations has been met with widespread global condemnation. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website Axios has written about this story and tells us more. The United States has predictably cast its veto against a bid by the Palestinian Authority for Palestine to be recognized as a full member of the United Nations. The United States, the Israeli regime's biggest ally, blocked a relevant draft resolution that had been put to vote at the 15-member United Nations Security Council on Thursday, 18th of April. Britain and Switzerland abstained from the vote, while the remaining 12 UN Security Council members voted yes. Vanessa Fraser, permanent representative of Malta, the Council's rotating president, said the draft resolution has not been adopted owing to the negative vote of a permanent member of the UN Security Council. Palestine is currently a non-member observer state. An application to become a full United Nations member needs to be approved by the UN Security Council, and then at least two-thirds of the UN General Assembly need to vote for it. Russia's United Nations Ambassador Vasily Nebenzia said the US once again demonstrated what they really think of the Palestinians. He said, for Washington, they do not deserve to have their own state. They're only a barrier on the path towards realizing the interests of Israel. Citing unclassified US State Department cables, The Intercept, an online American news organization, reported on Wednesday, 17th of April, that Washington was secretly pushing members of the UN Security Council into rejecting Palestine's membership bid. One cable read, "We urge you not to support any potential Security Council resolution recommending the admission of Palestine as a United Nations member state. Should such a resolution be presented to the UN Security Council for a decision in the coming days and weeks." The report said the countries being railroaded into rejecting the statehood included Malta, adding that Ecuador in particular was being asked to lobby Malta and other nations, including France, to oppose United Nations recognition. Zhang Jun, the representative of China at the United Nations, said during the Thursday vote that the decades-long dream of the Palestinian people had been quashed at a time when the admission of Palestine as a full member of the United Nations was more urgent than ever before. Iran's Press TV has also covered this story and tells us more. The spokesperson for Iran's foreign ministry has strongly condemned the irresponsible and unconstructive U.S. veto of a Palestinian request to the United Nations Security Council for full UN membership, blocking the world body's recognition of a Palestinian state. The Iranian foreign ministry spokesperson Nasser Kanani said on Friday, 19th of April, Washington's move disclosed the hypocritical nature of the U.S. foreign policy and the isolation of this country's position within the international community more than ever before. The vote at the 15-member United Nations Security Council on Thursday, 18th of April, on the statehood of Palestine was put forward by Algeria, which represents Arab nations on the UN Security Council. Nasser Kanani said, the U.S. provides unilateral and unlimited support for Israel in the political, economic, military, legal, and international fields. He added, Washington's ineffective support for the Tel Aviv regime is at the expense of the American people and at the cost of sacrificing regional and international peace and security over the past seven decades. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesperson emphasized the U.S. support for the Israeli regime has disgraced it on the world stage and proved that the country is not a neutral player and a responsible actor in the international community. Kanani once again reaffirmed the Palestinian people's legitimate and undeniable right to form an independent state with the city of Al-Quds as its capital across the historical land of Palestine from the river to the sea. Nasser Kanani pointed out, the Islamic Republic of Iran believes that the will of the resilient and heroic people of Palestine will ultimately overcome the will of the enemies of the Palestinian people, especially the fake apartheid Israeli regime. The website of Syria Times has also covered the same story and tells us more. Syria has condemned the United States after it vetoed the resolution backing full United Nations membership for Palestine. The Syrian Foreign Ministry, also in a statement on Friday, 19th of April, condemned the U.S. veto, saying it showed Washington's blind bias in favor of the Israeli regime. The Syrian Foreign Ministry stressed that hindering the establishment of an independent and sovereign Palestinian state would only prolong insecurity and instability in West Asia region. It said insecurity originally arose from Israel's ongoing occupation of Arab lands and its perpetration of the most crimes of aggression against the Palestinian people. The United States was the only nation in the 15-member UN Security Council to veto against the resolution on Thursday, 18th of April. The US action has drawn condemnation from many countries, especially Muslim world. The US action has drawn condemnation from many countries, especially from within the Islamic world. Washington's veto came amid the Israeli regime's war on the Gaza Strip that has increased sympathy towards Palestinians and international calls for recognition of an independent Palestinian state. Since the start of Israel's offensive on Gaza on 7th of October, Israel has massacred tens of thousands of innocent Palestinians, many of them women and children. The English website of Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC, has slammed the United States for blocking Palestine's request for full membership in the United Nations amid a genocidal Israeli war on Gaza. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC, said in a statement on Friday, 19th of April, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation expresses its deep regret at the failure of the United Nations Security Council to shoulder its responsibilities for granting the State of Palestine full membership at the United Nations. While the Palestinian nation are being subjected to the harshest level of aggression, persecution and genocide. According to the statement, the United States' veto of the draft resolution, which recommended granting Palestine full United Nations membership on Thursday, 18th of April, violates the provisions of the United Nations Charter, which allows membership for all countries that accept the obligations contained in it. The OIC stressed that the US move prevents the Palestinian people from obtaining their legitimate rights and contributes to prolonging the historical oppression imposed on the Palestinians for the past 75 years. Stressing the legitimate right of Palestine to embody its political and legal status in the United Nations, the organization said the recognition of the State of Palestine contributes to achieving peace and stability globally. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC, praised the countries that voted in favor of the draft resolution, saying their position demonstrates their support for truth, justice, freedom, and peace, and their rejection of policies of the Israeli regime.
Palestine declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson. This is Palestine Declassified. We're the only weekly show that's dedicated to investigating and exposing the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. In today's show, we'll be covering Iran's response to Israel's murderous missile assault on the Iranian consulate in Damascus earlier this month. The corporate media once again failed in its duty to report accurately about Israel and typically resorted to simply parroting Israel's version of events. But contrary to what Western political leaders and media commentators have said, Iran's drone and missile strike, codenamed Operation True Promise, did achieve its objective, as Latif Arabouchaker will explain in this report.
In what CNN reported was the largest drone attack in world history, the Islamic Republic of Iran struck at the Zionist entity on Saturday, the 13th of April. It was in response to the attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus, carried out a fortnight before. CNN also noted it was an operation which seemed planned to minimize casualties, in stark contrast to the previous 6 months of the Zionist genocide in Gaza. According to the Zionists, the operation was ineffective in that 99% of the drones and missiles launched were intercepted. But, of course, as the experience of the resistance axes shows, the most efficient way to defeat the Iron Dome system is to overwhelm and confuse it. In addition, however, it is plain that the missiles which did strike home, in particular at the Nevatim airbase in the Naqab desert, caused significant damage to the base. F-35 aircraft departed from here to bomb the Iranian consulate in Damascus. Western media are very reluctant to even mention the other major target, an intelligence base for Israeli military intelligence known as Unit 8200. The Zionists tried their best to suppress all mention of the attack on the top secret base, which, as the Israeli press has previously noted, is the first line of defense in preventing surprise attacks, and is an outpost that has been labeled the eyes of the nation. The chief of staff of the Iranian armed forces, Major General Mohammad Baghari, noted that the operation against Iran in Damascus was directed from here. The outpost is located literally inside the mountain in tunnels dug in the 1980s in the illegally occupied Golan Heights. It's not only the Palestinian resistance that has tunnels. The Islamic Republic quoted the right to self-defense, Article 51 of the UN Charter. The Russian Foreign Ministry cited Article 51 in its own response, failing to accede to Zionist demands to condemn Iran. China too did not condemn Iran, calling its response restrained. Though it was condemned by the West, some Western figures conceded its legitimacy, albeit grudgingly. British Foreign Secretary David Cameron was asked what the UK government would do if a hostile nation flattened one of Britain's consulates. He answered, "We would take very strong action."
What would Britain do if a hostile nation flattened one of our consulates?
Well, we would take, you know, we would take the very strong action.
He also appeared to simply take issue with the proportionality of the strike.
Countries have a right to respond when they feel they've suffered an aggression. Of course they do.
Operation True Promise was the first direct military strike on Israel by the Islamic Republic. It's unlikely to be the last. It utilized a tiny fraction of the available armaments, and it showed that it can successfully penetrate the much vaunted air defense systems of the Zionist entity.
Joining me in the studio, as usual, is our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University, and he's now a senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyim University. He's also a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch, and is a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. And joining us once again as our guest commentator is Batul Sabeti. Batul is a human rights activist and political analyst. She blogs at Stances to Salvation, and in her professional life, she's a chemical engineer based in London. Welcome to the show. Batul, you've already written, haven't you, about Operation True Promise, and you've argued that Iran is trying to actually avoid a regional war. Just set out what your rationale is for arguing that point.
Right. Iran has never wanted war. It's Israel that's consistently transgressed through its assassinations, its cyber attacks, prodding terrorist bombings inside Iran. Israel was not expecting Iran to respond in this way, though. But ultimately, Iran proved that it's a new era. The time for Israel to hit Iranian generals without facing direct consequences is long gone, and Iranian sovereignty is ultimately that red line. The Iranian strategy of response, though, is based on Gaza remaining the focus. To turn it ultimately into a regional conflict is giving Israel what it wants, because that would free Israel's hand in Gaza, as the world will be distracted away from their mass genocide. And that would ultimately facilitate Israel's only plan for Gaza, which is to create unbearable conditions to get rid of Gaza altogether. So the Iranian response comes with what serves the strategy of Gaza remaining under the microscope and not what serves its enemy strategy, because Israel's always wanted America to fight Iran on its behalf because Iran represents an existential threat to it. So what Iran wants to do is it wants to halt the Israeli war on Gaza. It considers this to be the greatest victory because the war would have ended with the Gazan resistance standing strong. But at the same time, Iran has also sent a direct message, and that is, if we want to respond in a strong manner, it will be something else. And if Israel is stupid enough to escalate, Iran will make it much worse.
Right. Well, from a military perspective then, David, I mean, in your opinion, how effective was Iran's actions in this occasion?
Well, the question of what military success is something which, of course, is part of the debate. So, of course, the Zionists said 99% of these missiles were downed. Now, that might actually be true, startlingly enough. But the question is not whether they downed all these drones which were sent deliberately in order to fox the Iron Dome system and to distract it from the really serious missiles which did hit their targets, the hypersonic missiles which were sent over by Iran, take 12 minutes to get there. Those hit their targets. But some people have said, well, it didn't put the base out of operation. The science has been saying that as well. Well, the point of an operation like this is not to put the base out of operation, not to destroy the Zionist entity's defences, but to show that at will they can do that. And that in the future, that will be exactly what will happen. Mm. And there can be no doubt. So the Zionists might say, oh, well, it was terribly unsuccessful. The Iranians can't even do anything right. But actually, they know in reality that this is an indication that their air defences, including the air defences helped by the Americans, by the UK, they are not going to be adequate, even for a small number of missiles. And the Iranians, of course, have got a large number of missiles.
Mm-hmm. So the Iron Dome can probably deal with drones, but not these hypersonic
That's
missiles.
That's right, yes.
Well, Batul, the Islamic Republic targeted military sites, which is in stark contrast, isn't it, to what the Zionists actually do?
Right. Iran strikes sent multiple messages in terms of the limits of deterrence and its options, you know, whether that's through the quantity, the magnitude and the type of attack that it launched. That is to say that our missiles, yes, they flew above political institutions like the Knesset, for example, but we're not going to hit them, nor will we hit densely populated areas or economic centers. Ultimately, we are going to respond from the areas in which Israel targeted our consulate. So hit the Israeli Nevatim Air Base, for example, or hit the intelligence headquarters in the Golan Heights that was involved in the consulate's attack. Iran is not like the Israeli occupation entity. Iran abides by international law in the events of war. It doesn't target those who are considered civilians. And in this way, they're also not warranting an Israeli response. You know, there's no excuse for Israel to then expand the war because it's a tit for tat. But Israel, on the other hand, they're targeting civilians in the most unprecedented fashion, and that's for two reasons. Number one, create the most unbearable conditions for Gaza in hopes that they can get rid of Gaza altogether because they have no other plan. And number two, their failure translates into anger and revenge. Israel hasn't achieved a single military strategic objective since October the 7th. It hasn't freed a single hostage through war. Resistance infrastructure and institutions are still intact. And this is all due to the morale of the Palestinians. You know, they managed through guerrilla warfare tactics, coupled with real bravery of coming at zero distance from their enemy, to prevent Israeli soldiers from reaching every corner in Gaza to dismantle the resistance.
Mm. Well, David, the military sites that were targeted by Iran included the secret intelligence base in the Golan, didn't it? Mm. What do we know about that?
Well, this is a top secret base. It was revealed in the Israeli press some years ago that it existed, and it's referred to as being a top secret base at the time. Some people are now saying, oh, well, everyone knew this was there. It's not a secret at all. But, you know, if you look back at the press, you can see that that's how they regarded it. And it's a base which is a signals intelligence base for Unit 8200, which, of course, is the signals intelligence, military intelligence operation of the Israelis, who we've discussed in this program lots of times.
Yes,
and so what they're doing there is they're the nation's eyes and ears. They're there to check first when attacks are coming, and of course they were involved in the attack on Damascus on the Iranian consulate. Mm, so this is it's a secret base. Yes, it's an intelligence base, and it's at the forefront of Israel's intelligence operation. So the indication here is, of course, that this is a base that the Iranians know where it is, and they can hit it. And so, so again, this is the same as the Nevatim base, which sent the fighters and the bombers to a target Damascus. This is an indication that at will, Iran can hit whatever targets it wants.
Mm-hmm. Well, Batul, I mean, you've referred, haven't you, to the lack of confidence in the Zionist entity now. And I mean, that collective nervousness has seen some settlers rushing to leave, hasn't it?
Right. So in 75 years, this is the first attack of its kind on Israeli soil. Israel demonizes Iran as an existential threat to Israel without direct confrontation. So now the settlers are really feeling the heat. There's real uncertainty and tremble. They feel it's serious and it's threatening. And we have to understand the subconscious of the settler is that they have the upper hand on everything. the whole world is behind them. You know, in previous wars, as long as they can get away with the things that they're doing, America will keep protecting them. And for the first time, these 6 months have ultimately proved that Israel is not capable of achieving anything. You know, you've already got 100K that were displaced from the north and around Gaza. Its economy is in tatters. There are internal divisions. It's all gloom across Israel from whatever aspect you take it. The settlers feel Netanyahu is playing on them for his own interests. He doesn't care about the hostages. They feel a lack of security because not only has Israel failed to defeat the Gazan resistance, that is the weakest link in the whole resistance axis. So now imagine fighting with the source of the resistance, that is Iran, right? But even America has threatened that its support is conditional if Israel continues dealing in a manner opposed to America. We're seeing Europe and America buckling at the pressure of the world against Israel. So all in all, these settlers are coming to milk and honey land. When it turns into onion and garlic land, they're going to leave.
Well, David, I wonder what, I mean, we heard on the film there, David Cameron sort of tacitly acknowledging, didn't he, that Iran's actions were legitimate. What do you make of that?
Well, we played the little clips there, and if you play those clips like that, it makes it seem like he's doing that. But, of course, that's all couched in the top line which he's giving, which is this is an entirely unacceptable attack. But actually, if you listen carefully to the words and listen to what he's actually saying, it's actually clear that he's saying that this is a legitimate operation. It's just that it was disproportionate, which, of course, is what they quite often say about Israel. They were wrong to kill so many children. They could have killed a few less children. But they're saying that this attack was disproportionate. And that's the best that they can come up with. So that's really interesting to hear the British government say that. Of course, Cameron is not an ideological neoconservative, but he goes with the wind on that question. But here we are. They actually recognise that this is a legitimate operation.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard the exchange in the House of Commons yesterday, but it seems to me, and obviously he can't report to the House of Commons because he's in the House of Lords, the British Foreign Secretary, but he seemed to go considerably further than virtually every single member of the House of Commons on both sides of the chamber. I mean, extraordinary.
Well, it's extraordinary. But Cameron's like that, isn't he? He's not ideologically neoconservative, so he's more of a realist in some ways, and therefore he'll make these kind of comments which don't really fit with the line which the rest of the government would want him to say.
Yeah, well, we'll come back anyway now to the discussion after our next report about the reaction in the region to Operation True Promise.
The Iranian operation was widely welcomed in the region. In Tehran, crowds gathered in the streets to celebrate. They lit flares and set off fireworks. The Iranian parliament stood as one to cheer the strike. Meanwhile, Palestinians gathered in the West Bank chanting, "God is great," as Iranian missiles soared overhead. In Jordan, while the government collaborated with the Zionist entity, the citizens were out on the streets. Meanwhile, in Gaza, there were relieved observations that for the first time in months, there were no drones overhead, and bombing in Rafah and the rest of Gaza was suspended. The next day, three bakeries opened their doors in Gaza for the first time in 6 months. These had reportedly been authorized by the Zionist regime, itself a scandalous indication that they had been forcibly closed by the Zionist. In the West Bank, Palestinians took matters into their own hands and tore down sections of the apartheid wall. Unfortunately, genocidal Jewish settlers also launched a mass pogrom against a Palestinian village northeast of Ramallah. The sooner the settlers are driven out, the sooner peace can come. But the Iranian retaliation has certainly given confidence and increased morale of Palestinians all over the world.
Well, David, what's the reaction of the Palestinian resistance to Iran's actions?
Well, you can follow it, of course, on social media, statement after statement from the Qassam Brigades, Hamas, from Palestinian Islamic Jihad, from the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, even from Fatah al-Intifada, who've put out statements, all of them are welcoming this. So, and let's remember that the Palestinian resistance is predominantly Sunni Muslim, welcoming this apparently Shia octopus, as Gilad Erdan, the Israeli ambassador to the UN, put it the other day. There are strikes against Israel. So there's an indication here that it doesn't matter whether you're Sunni or Shia. It's about welcoming something which supports the resistance activities. And, of course, that's what all of the resistance has done.
Mm. Well, Batul, would you say that this has boosted morale, then, of ordinary Palestinians?
No doubt. Palestine doesn't feel alone. There are others coming to its aid. For the first time, there's a real equivalent deterrence capability. People feel the likelihood of victory now. Enemy planes were distracted by the Iranian drones. You know, real missiles reached and hit the main targets, and that's what matters. You know, there is confidence in the capability of victory. With Iran especially, that's the strongest in the axis, directly now joining the supporting fronts of Lebanon and Yemen and Iraq to bring about a halt to the war in Gaza. So if the war ends now, it's a victory by all means. You know, that's why Iran does not want to expand the war, because an expanded war causes confusion. People debate interests and motives rather than seeing the truth for what it is. Iran prefers that calm work, you know, not winning through decisive blows, but on a point-by-point basis. Ultimately, what matters now is Israel is weak and trembling. If it was not for America's mobilization of all its forces in the region just to detect the Iranian drones and missiles and hit them, Israel couldn't have defended itself at all. You know, so for America to go along with Israel now is only to prevent its collapse and its disintegration. And to work with Israel is an order for America to pass its vision and not allow Israel to continue blundering. Otherwise, America made it very clear that it will not participate on an attack in Iran. Israel is ultimately alone in this.
Well, David, would you say then that those huge queues of Palestinians outside the reopened bakeries were as a direct consequence of Iran's missile strikes?
No, it seems not. I thought that when I first saw them, but no, it seems not. Extraordinarily, the Zionists had given permission for these World Food Programme bakeries to open. Some 20 of them, there's now something like 23 of them open in Gaza, which is an indication, of course, that they had previously forbidden there to be bakeries operation, which is itself hugely problematic and, of course, part of the whole genocide there. So what we do see is an increased confidence of the Palestinians. We see that in the people openly queuing for the bread, but also the fact that many thousands of Gazans are now making their way back to Gaza City, into the north of Gaza, even while they've been attacked by the IDF, the occupation forces, for doing so. So it's a huge increase in the confidence in general of the Palestinian people. You can see them marching back there to North Gaza.
Yes, indeed.
On the screen. So this is an indication that for them, you know, there's a re-establishment of civilization in Gaza, and a rebuilding can start. And that, of course, is completely contrary to everything that the Zionists want.
Mm-hmm. So if it wasn't as a result of the Iran's missile strikes, I mean, what do you think precipitated Israel giving permission then, given that they stopped them opening those, well, the bomb, or even didn't they anyway?
Well, it's the pressure on them from America, isn't it, that have forced them backwards.
Yes.
Even prior to the Damascus imbroglio, it's forced them backwards, and they've been forced to reopen the water pipes, allow some food aid in, although they're still interfering with that, and allowing some of these bakeries to open. So they've been forced back, because they were trying to starve Gaza into submission, and they were making the plans to invade Rafah, which now appear to have been cancelled as a direct result of this Iranian strike.
Well, Batul, do you think Iran's action has forced the Zionist regime to postpone the attack on Rafah then?
It's already been postponed, and actually what we're seeing is the situation in Gaza has slightly calmed down as well. Yesterday, Bloomberg stated on the Israeli military intelligence, Amos Yadlin, that the Iranian attack may lead to a strategic change in the war in Gaza and even its end. So the priority for Israel right now is certainly Iran. The West is applying pressure also on Israel to come to its terms of the political settlement. And there is more desperation we can see from the West to end the war altogether, because it's becoming uncontrollable. It's becoming beyond the ability to control what comes after. It's more than ever we're in a position where we're nearing the reach of a deal. This attack has already created a much better ground and atmosphere for Palestinian negotiators. It's really strengthened the Palestinian position on the negotiating table. And the truth is, if other than Netanyahu was in power, this war would have ended. Netanyahu currently is the stumble block. With that being said, though, America's decision always ends up reigning, because they are the ones that are in control of the course. So the continuation of this war is only in favor of the resistance. The region supports the resistance. The military solution has failed. And so America wants to push the political settlements now in hopes that that will weaken the resistance. And ultimately, Iran's strike and Iran's ability to retaliate is certainly helping in reaching that ceasefire.
So in that case, then, what's the calculus then going forward, David? I mean, Do you think the Americans actually realise that this has been a, you know, major defeat for the Zionists?
Well, it's difficult to read through the reams and reams of propaganda and work out what's going on here. But the Americans were apparently saying to Netanyahu, oh, look, this is a victory for you, so you don't need to strike back. Well, of course, nobody thinks that it was a victory for Netanyahu. And, of course, the Americans don't think that either. The Americans know, because not only do they know that the missiles hit, but they also were monitoring the missiles themselves and providing intelligence to the Israelis in order to shoot down those ones that which they did. So, of course, the Americans know this is a massive defeat, and as does everybody else in the world. Even while the mainstream press is pretending this was a failed operation by Iran and most of these missiles were shot down, everybody knows in the military intelligence establishment that this was a massive defeat for Israel, and indeed shows that Iran can strike at will should it wish to. But it's making it very clear it didn't wish to at this time.
Mm. What do you think's making the Americans then backtrack somewhat? Because they've given unqualified support so far, haven't they?
Because they don't want a regional war. It's the same with their question in relation to Yemen. I mean, just the other day, they made all sorts of offers to Ansarallah in Yemen, the government of Yemen, and Ansarallah came back and said, no, we don't want any of that. No, we want the bombing to stop in Gaza. That's our price. Sure. And of course, the Americans don't want a war with Ansarallah because they can't defeat them. Mm. And they can't defeat Iran. So this is game over for them. They have to back off because they don't, not even the Americans want to take on Ansarallah and indeed Iran, never mind Israel, and Israel can't do it alone.
Mm. Well, Batul, what do you think this means for the future then?
The ending of the war at this rate is a big victory for the resistance that is not just winning on the ground, but has gained support of global public opinion, whilst Israel is increasingly becoming a pariah in global politics. Israel had one task, triumph against the weakest link in the resistance axis, that is Gaza. They failed. Israel is ultimately becoming a burden, so its role for the West will naturally shrink to match its true size. World politics is not a charity. If you dig a ditch and fall into it, they'll help you out. One time, two times, three times. By the third or fourth round, they'll not waste their time, energy and resources to their own detriment to help an entity that keeps tripping. Israel will naturally fit its real size through the two-state solution. America wants stability in the region. This, of course, doesn't mean that the two-state solution or the American strategy will be successful. For the first time, though, we are seeing that the Palestinian cause, due to October the 7th, has become a priority in every nation's agenda in every election. Public opinion at this rate cannot be reversed. Support for Israel, therefore, will reduce with time. America will need to find a substitute. We need to understand that Biden is not defending Israel as Israel. He's defending the imperialist project represented by Israel until he can determine what it will settle on. And so for America to go along with Israel right now is to prevent its collapse and disintegration at the hands of the resistance. But ultimately, what it wants to do is it wants to drag Israel to fit within the American vision of providing stability for the region and not continuing with its manic genocidal tendencies.
No, indeed. Well, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for today. So thank you to our guest, Batul Sabeti, and of course, our resident expert, Professor David Miller. I hope you'll join us next time for more forensic investigations and analysis. But until then, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qiraati. Please stay tuned.
انما المؤمنون فقط مؤمن واقعی کسانی است که آمنوا بالله و رسوله.
In the Holy Quran Surah Al-Hujurat Ayah 15 we read The faithful are only those who have attained faith in Allah and His Apostle. This means that the real mu'min is the one who believes in Allah and His Apostle and the successors of Prophet Muhammad on earth. The concept of faith or iman has degrees. For instance, there are some people who wear only black for commemorating the event of Karbala. Still, there are some people who attend the majalis of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. There are still some others who donate in memory of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. So their faith in Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam has different degrees.
بعضی ها هم مقدار مسلمان که بچهشون زنن حسین از بچهشون زنن حسین
However, there are some people who only name their children as Hussein, but nothing in their lives is like a Muslim. They neither establish Salat or pay Zakat or fast during the holy month of Ramadan. In better words, they have the lowest degree of faith. Faith, as in the famous hadith we read, has 10 levels. In a hadith we read, If you want to test your faith, you must see in what occasions you are ready to tell lies. Some people are ready to lose their faith for an ice cream, some for a car, some for a house, and some for money. This shows the different degrees of iman or faith and how easy some people might lose their faith as a Muslim. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qiraati. To find out more about this program, please log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Dear listeners, this is the second part of A Window to Palestine. A Window to Palestine.
Ya estamos de regreso para seguir las conversaciones que hemos tenido.
We are now back to continue the conversation we had to learn about the Palestinian diaspora in Chile. Today I invite you to talk with Valentina Salvador Huagui, a Chilean doctor of Palestinian origin, who has been working recently since the beginning of the genocide in Gaza with a group of doctors to try to help. Let's learn a little bit more about Valentina through the following video.
Un poco más sobre Valentina.
Valentina Salvador es nieta de palestinos.
Valentina Salvador is the granddaughter of Palestinians. She studied medicine and is a specialist in surgeries for oncological diseases. She learned the love of cooking from her grandmother and grew up with recipes that she still continues to prepare and that connect her with the cultural traditions of her homeland. In 2017, she traveled to Palestine as part of a program that brought together the diaspora from different continents. She returned with the memory of a kind, happy and welcoming people who enjoyed life with simplicity despite the tensions of the occupation, the wall, and the many shortcomings. As part of the Doctors' Society of Palestine, where some 300 specialists participate, they began to pressure scientific societies to play a more active role and denounce the genocide. The events, however, have led them to continue their work raising funds to send medical supplies through the Chilean embassy in Egypt. Valentina believes that not only is the lack of food and water serious, the treatments that were left unfinished, the lack of vaccines and the lack of medical care in short are also other slow and silent ways of exterminating the Palestinian nation.
Hola Valentina, muchas gracias por haber aceptado esta.
Hello Valentina, thank you very much for accepting our invitation. You are third generation. On what date and for what reasons do your parents migrated here?
Acerca de la llegada de tus padres.
I'm sorry, your grandparents.
De mis abuelos, sí. Daniel, muchas gracias por la invitación. Un honor.
Well, of course, my grandparents. Daniel, thank you very much for the invitation. It is an honor to be here representing the Doctors of Palestine. Look, my family on both sides come more or less before the Nakba. It was mainly as a result of the persecutions by the Ottoman Empire. For example, my family name is Salvador. My grandfather arrived in Chile around 1910. Several of his children were born in Betlalal, but my grandfather was born here in Chile, in the town of Catamu, where they settled upon their arrival in Chile. On the other hand, in depth, my grandfather's wife, Victoria Issa, came to Chile directly from Palestine. Around 1929-1930, my grandfather's father arrived here with them, and from there, in the bottom line, the family has settled in this land.
Aquí hay dos eventos que es importante destacar.
Here there are two events that are important to highlight. It was around the First World War that the Palestinians arrived. Turkish Ottoman Empire decided for the first time to force the inhabitants to defend the empire in any possible wars that might arise. And they began, for the first time, to recruit the firstborn children, the eldest of each family. And that makes many Christians, and also Jews, send their children out of Palestine to avoid taking them to the war. In the case of the grandmother, she surely came because of the great general strike of the 29th, where the colonization process had already begun, and we were at the gates of the Nakba, but the Nakba was already planned. This is very interesting because this also generates surely the same thing that happened in your family. A generational gap. The children of that do not have much of a relationship with Palestine. They do not pass on the language, for example. And it is always the third generation that recovers Palestinianity. What was that process like? What was it that set it off? And what are you up to today?
¿Qué fue lo que lo detonó y en qué estás hoy día?
Mira, tal cual como tú dices.
Look, just like you say, it happens to me also. Well, obviously, in my parents' house, they spoke an Arabic language. And being born in Chile, they kind of had to recover everything because in Chile, things were a little different. It's just like you say, they kind of experienced Palestine in the house.
Cosa que para nosotros fue diferente.
Something that was different for us. I think I get emotional because of the topic, sorry. But I think I have returned to it. I come from a school with a lot of social sense, a lot of politics. I don't think I had ever questioned it, like where it comes from. But yes, I think it was my dad who instilled it into me. Regardless of the fact that I seldom spoke, there was always these Palestinian things in my house. Always, always. Everything had to do with it. Food, traditions. And I think this provoked my sense of curiosity to investigate what this Palestinian thing they were talking about is. So I started to investigate, to learn from history. When people spoke to me, I like to have information and tell them what this is, what Palestine is, what is happening, because they asked me at school. Deep down, there was an important Palestinian group that would talk about the issue of Palestine, and sometimes I felt like I had to participate in such arguments. The Palestinian issue always resonated in my head. It's good, it catches my attention, because I'm the most Palestinian-like person in my generation.
In fact, you are the first to travel to Palestine.
Exactly. In 2017, I said that I really have to go. I have to see what happens. And in addition to being the most beautiful trip of my life, at the same time, it is also a very powerful trip.
You're also sensations and emotions only. I mean, it is not verbal information to transfer, but implicit information that comes not only from traditions, but also from the undeclared relationship that is always present in our lives. What was it like to return to Palestine?
Mira, yo el año anterior al viaje leí el libro de Lalina Merwane, El Volverse Palestina.
Look, the year before the trip, I read Lina Meruana's book, Becoming Palestine. It affected me deeply. It was really the sensation I felt. And when you get there, as you say, it is like a feeling of being found, of happiness, of belonging, of understanding your origin, of identifying with all that, and at the same time, of feeling that they have this tremendous bond with Chile. Everyone watches Palestino soccer matches. Everyone has a family. They ask you, do you know this one? Do you know that one? And this really exists. Although they are so many kilometers away, but at the same time, it is so close, near our hearts. And you see the people, how they are in their houses, what they have in their houses, and you say, I am from here.
Well, we must highlight one thing that is geographical and not many people are aware of. Palestine and this metropolitan region are at the same degrees of southern and northern latitude, and therefore they have the same seasons, they have the same fruits, they have the same types of food, and they are also very similar in terms of geographical situations. After the October the 7th attack, you, together with a group of doctors, and also Teresa Chomali, who already has more experience in this, formed this group of doctors for Palestine, and they took on the task of trying to bring medical missions to Gaza. This group today has no way to operate in the current situation in Gaza and act against the humanitarian crisis that has generated this genocide. This has been carried out throughout the West. It is no longer just Israel. South Africa has also filed a lawsuit against the United States and England for complicity. What do you want? And what progress have you made to reach doctors in Palestine and help them to be able to collaborate?
Mira, la verdad que ha sido...
Look, the truth is that it has been very good in many ways. This group that was formed was born from desperation, I would say, from Teresa Chomali, from seeing how little we could do. The truth is that the organizations from civil society, above all us as doctors, can do little about it. So at the beginning of November, she created this WhatsApp group in which actually we experienced something like an explosion of ideas, of political thoughts, of what to do and what not to do. And from there, Teresa created a committee, and I am a member of this committee, which has enabled us to organize different things. Because in the first place, we know she's already in contact with people there, and because we see it, of course, in the media, that currently it is impossible at this moment to do something to go there. But since we felt the need, we started to do a campaign in which we are raising money to purchase medical supplies and give them to the hospitals. We have received information and are aware of the needs. Hospitals are the first priority. priority. There are plenty of needs, but we have to narrow them down and see what we can really send. As Doctors for Palestine, we went to the Chancellery and we were very well received there. The Government Fund of Chile was committed to helping us in every possible way, that is, the delivery of these supplies. Because it has happened that Chile even donated money to UNRWA and other entities, but this money is wasted on probably other needs of another type. So the idea is that through the Embassy of Chile in Egypt, we are going to purchase these supplies and they are going to help us deliver them directly to the hospital directors who are directly in charge of receiving these aids.
If someone wants to join Doctors for Palestine, how do they do it?
Look, we have this WhatsApp group. There is an Instagram account named Doctors for Palestine also. Via this account, one can also contact the group, and there in the Instagram group, you will find a form that must be completed that helps us organize better and get to know each other. As doctors in Palestine, many of us have different specialties, but we did not know each other before joining this group. We didn't know that, for example, we work in the same place sometimes. So this has been quite fruitful in terms of being a means for knowing each other who are in Chile and working together. And then through Instagram or WhatsApp, we will invite the volunteer to join us. And we are also doing now a campaign which is about the donation of 250 million pesos. We are also doing a bingo and we had it in the previous week at the Palestinian Club with the aim of reaching this goal of 250 million of pesos. This money is going to be used for medical supplies.
Very good. A question that many of the doctors and the doctors who are seeing us are going to ask themselves. Is it only the Chilean doctors of Palestinian origin, or can Chilean doctors also participate?
No, una muy buena pregunta. De hecho, hay muchos médicos no palestinos.
A very good question. In fact, there are many non-Palestinian doctors. There are doctors who have even gone to the missions in Gaza who know the place perfectly but have nothing to do with Palestine. In fact, many of them are here through their acquaintances. There is even a group of doctors who have canceled their vacations and donated their money to fund for our campaign. They are not even Palestinians, but they say what matters to them is the humanitarian aspect of this issue. The point is that we cannot understand. There's tremendous violence here. There's a catastrophe, and we are in a lot of pain and a lot of despair. But as a civil society, we cannot do anything. So we have a prepared group of approximately 50 people. We hope to eventually be able to go there. The desire is there, and we just need permission. The truth is that there is so much destruction and everything, and we know there is a huge need for our specialties. I mean, imagine with everything that has happened, like the number of diseases that are probably obsolete in that area. There have been no vaccinations, the need for cancer checks, need of the post-war wound, the need for plastic surgery. The needs are multiple and huge. So really, as a group, we hope to be able to do many more things. We hope to achieve the required money, and we have to raise it to fulfill our goals.
Well, here's another example of the great distance that exists between the Western governments that are complicit in the genocide and the civil societies that around the world today are mobilizing to support the Palestinian people, not only in Gaza, but also in the West Bank and Jerusalem al-Quds. I thank you, Valentina, for accepting this invitation, and I wish you much success in the initiatives that you are undertaking. Greetings to all the participants of Doctors for Palestine group.
Thank you very much, Danielle.
Let's take a break, and we'll be back in a minute to learn a little more about the history of the Zionist project and how it has affected Palestine.
These Israelis gathered to watch the bombardment of Gaza while enjoying soft drinks and snacks. People dragged plastic chairs or even sofas to the top of a hill and cheered on their military as if they were watching some sort of sport.
They chose to rule them. It's their fault. They got it to where it is now, not us.
But don't you think you'll get worse by b***ing them?
No, I think that's the only solution.
I think
they should just clear off all the city. Just take it off the ground. Yes, I'm a little bit fast.
What's wrong with these people?